Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Hockey in the Classroom, episode 23. As always, with you, Wally Walsek, and down in Big D, Tony. What's going on, Tony?
Man, not a whole lot. Hit 70 degrees in early February, so I'm definitely not complaining. And hey, I've been able to go watch the Stars, and there have been a lot of college hockey connections. I think at one point, Joe Pavelski is off to an incredible start. Obviously, a Wisconsin guy, and he was playing on a line with a former WCHA foe and Tanner Caro at Michigan Tech. So it's pretty cool to see some college hockey guys in the lineup.
Yeah, I'm definitely jealous of the 70 degrees. I'll tell you that. It's more like negative 70 in Chicago. But, you know, that's the winter for you. Chicago decides to get winter late or beginning of the new year instead of, you know, in the normal times.
Yeah, you got to have it sometime, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. And, yeah, kind of jealous you get to go to hockey games. But, again, another battle for another day, I guess.
We'll get there.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Tony, you know, we've been off for quite a few weeks now. Listeners, if they're concerned what was going on between myself getting COVID and between Tony and I, as we've stated before, this is not our primary job, unfortunately, at least not yet, maybe in the future. But we also have day jobs, and, you know, day jobs kind of take away from our lives a little bit here. And with the holidays and traveling, you know, it was definitely a hard time to get this recorded. But Tony, let me tell you this. I'm happy to be back recording with you.
Yeah, same too. Same here. It feels like it's been forever.
Yeah. And, you know, Tony, I mean, in 4 or 5 weeks, a lot can happen. A lot has been happening in college hockey for the people that may or may not know or have not been following as closely. I mean, we're getting close to playoff time already. I mean, we're in February. Playoffs start towards the end of this month, beginning of March. I know this was kind of a shortened season and COVID and everything, but still flying by here, which is crazy to say that and think, you know, this season could be close to coming to an end. Hopefully not the same way as last year, though.
Yeah, let's hope. Let's hope we can get something going. And, you know, I'm interested to see as we get closer to the NCAA tournament if they decide to go to more of a bubble feel, because we know the success of it in the NCHC.
Yeah, the bubble has definitely been a huge factor. And, you know, before, I think, Tony, the last time we talked, you know, the vaccine wasn't even released yet. You know, and for the people at Kibo with current events with COVID, the vaccine is out and about. So maybe hopefully this vaccine will kind of open some doors for attendance-wise when it comes at least to the Frozen Four, possibly. You know, if not, you know, at least for some of the family and friends, for the players and the teams that make it along the way. So we'll see how that goes. Obviously, when we get word of it, we will obviously relay it here via our social media accounts and on the podcast.
Absolutely. And you know, I think if they want fans in the stands, maybe just move the tournament to Texas.
You know what? You know, that's not a bad idea. And, you know, I was going to kind of say, why don't we just start moving a lot of sports to Texas at this rate? You guys seem like you're the only one that will let people in and out of places and whatnot and live somewhat of a quote unquote normal life again.
and I want to add something to that. I've gone to all four of the Stars home games this year, and, you know, people might be judging me for that, and so be it. But the Stars in the American Airlines Center have absolutely killed it. I mean, honestly, I feel more comfortable going to a Stars game than I do going to the grocery store. You know, the building can, I think for hockey, usually around 18,000. And, you know, they're really only putting about 4,200 in the stands. And, I mean, there's nobody in the row in front of me, no one in the row behind me. The nearest person is like 5 or 6 seats over. So it's pretty spaced out. And the best part, no lines for the bathroom and the concession stand.
You know, and I could kind of vouch for that, Tony. You sent me a Snapchat or something a few weeks back when you went to the opening night home opener. And they did an outstanding job. I saw they had the plexiglass in between segments, but you're not next to the person that's on the other side of the plexiglass. It looks like the next people are actually 2 plexiglass over. I'll vouch for the Dallas Stars organization that, you know, they did an outstanding job, that staff, getting the arena ready and safe for, you know, what is it about? You said 4,200, almost 5,000 fans, so at least right now.
They've been getting about 4,200 a game.
So, but you know, Tony, it's also a matter of, you know, comfortability. I mean, we live in a world now where the norm is uncomfortable. People don't want to leave the house, and for whatever reason, if you're not comfortable, don't go. Like, don't, you know, you mentioned like you might be getting judged. Hey, if they want to judge you, let them judge you. You're not uncomfortable going to a Stars game because they're doing a hell of a job keeping you guys safe. I'm all for it. Hey, we got to get towards back to normal. And it sounds like, at least in Dallas, you guys are taking steps in the forward direction versus some places. I'm not going to name states and cities, but who have kind of, you know, taken a little bit of a, you know, stalemate or gone backwards a little bit in 2021. So, you know, hey, good for you guys. I'm happy you're going to hockey games. I wish I can be down there going to hockey games with you like the good old days. So hopefully, hopefully in the Midwest, we'll start opening up a little bit before the hockey season ends here, either from the professional level or college level. I don't care which it is. Get me somewhere.
Touché. Cheers to that, man.
But Tony, so, I mean, we've been off for a while. We got a lot to cover here. You know, before we really start diving into this, you know, a couple notes here, a couple big news items. First one was the one that you mentioned, and that's Notre Dame is officially hosting the entire Big Ten tournament. I don't think we're really shocked by this, though, are we?
No, not in the least bit. I mean, Compton is an incredible arena. And, you know, it makes sense. I mean, with the Michigan schools, obviously Notre Dame, Penn State, it's a very centralized location, too.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure if this was maybe a couple years ago when fans were an actual, you know, thing, people might bitch and moan and go, well, that's home ice advantage for the whole term. Are you kidding me? Well, based on one article I've read, I don't think Notre Dame is hosting any fans. So, you know, it's funny how this year, and especially in college hockey, it's there's no really sense of the home ice advantage because the fans really kind of, you know, dictate that big home ice advantage. And there's no fans, no student sections, nothing. So this isn't really a home ice advantage really for Notre Dame at this point, who probably could really use it come the Big Ten playoffs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the only advantage I think there is the familiarity with the building and, you know, knowing how the bounces work off the walls and sleeping in your own bed.
Yeah, exactly. But in other news, you know, still sticking in the Big Ten, you know, Michigan's going to go down for 2 weeks due to an outbreak on campus. And this is the life we live with COVID, especially when it comes to collegiate sports. You know, this isn't going to necessarily hurt Michigan as much as people might think. They still, like you mentioned, Tony, will qualify for the Frozen Four tournament and the Big Ten tournament. Once we get to that state, they've already played what we believe is the minimum number of games to qualify. The only thing this is going to hurt them is their positioning, possibly in the Big Ten tournament. They're sitting at third right now behind Minnesota, Wisconsin, who I think are dictating the Big Ten, which we'll talk about later. But Michigan right now, with Notre Dame and Penn State right on their tails, they can drop all the way down to fifth, or they can try to stay at third. They're going to need some help in the next 2 weeks.
The biggest thing I worry about with a team like Michigan is when you're not playing – when it's shut down because of COVID, you're also not practicing. So
yeah,
it's the fact that you're not on the ice, and it'll be interesting to see when they get back on, if they get back on, how that rust is going to be.
Yeah, this is it's different than that we're seeing right now in the NHL, at least, where if guys are testing positive, they're being isolated, but the players that are testing negative get to continue playing and practicing for the most part. We've obviously seen in the NHL so far games get postponed for X amount of reasons due to COVID. But when your campus is now on lockdown, due to a campus outbreak, the whole team is not touching that ice. 2 weeks, I mean, Tony, we've talked about it last year and years past. You know, sometimes these bye weeks can hurt teams, especially if they're hot. And Michigan got off to a hot start beginning of the year. They started to cool off a little bit. and now you're taking 2 weeks off where you're not practicing, you're not working out. You're basically, they're sitting in their dorms, apartments, wherever the hell they're living, doing whatever. I can't see this being a good transition for Michigan, especially as they come in the home stretch of the regular season. If you're Notre Dame and Penn State, you're really looking to take advantage over the next 2 weeks while Michigan is out.
Yeah, no, and I think Michigan State's a prime example of what I'm talking about with Michigan, how, you know, how sluggish they came out after they hadn't played in what seemed like a month.
Yeah. And, you know, Tony, to stay on the same topic here, unfortunately, Boston University is also going to be out over the next few weeks. In fact, and this is going to hurt more for them in BU than it will Michigan, especially when it comes to the national tournament time. You know, this is a really good team. And right now, Boston University has only played 6 games so far. I'm trying to see. It looks like they don't even know how long this is going to be on pause. They're going to do a week-by-week status per this article published by the College Hockey News due to an outbreak of COVID. And this is going to really hurt. This is a good team, Tony. Like I said, out of 6 games right now, they're 5-1 overall. They're 3-1 in the conference. If Boston University – you know, ends up coming back in 2 to 3 weeks, they're not going to have enough games, I don't think, to qualify for the tournament, which is really a shame. And, you know, there comes the question, well, what if they play in the Hockey East playoffs and they win the whole thing? Does the NCAA let them in or not? That's going to be interesting if that does end up playing out. I don't even know at this point if they will even make it to the Hockey East playoffs. So it's unfortunate for Boston University with this outbreak right now.
Yeah, it's a shame, and that's why I think, you know, for me, this year is going to have a big asterisk on it, whoever wins the title. I mean, even more than some of the other sports. It's just the good teams that aren't playing is just unfortunate.
Yeah, I agree, and we don't even have all the teams playing. You know, obviously, like the Ivy League schools, they opted out of the season. You know, we are hopeful that maybe they would come back January 1, and they chose before, I think it was back in December, late November, they decided just to opt out of the complete season altogether, which, you know, leads me into the ECAC, which is, Tony, I mean, it's a 4-team, we talked about this last time, it's a 4-team conference, teams that are going to get to know each other quite a bit. But what's intriguing is out of 10 games so far, we got a pretty close race. Clarkson, Quinnipiac tied for first at 17 points. St. Lawrence is at 15, and Colgate really isn't out of it at 11 points, and all 4 schools are playing pretty well in the late stretch here. So this is kind of intriguing to see how this might play out.
Yeah, and Clarkson and Quinnipiac have played, I think, 6 times in the over the last 3 weeks, and they went 2-2-2. So they're 2 pretty even teams, and they've been battling pretty closely over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I mean, from a you know, the way that all these teams are kind of playing right now, these Clarkson, Quinnipiac, they play a very similar game. You know, none of these 4 are high profile offensive teams. There's a lot of grinding it out, and a lot of good defensive play, and a lot of close games they'll win by. You know, this isn't a conference where they're on a Friday night going to blow out a team 6-1 and then come back and then win maybe 3-2. They grind out each game each night. This is what makes this conference really intriguing, is this can be really any of the 4's conference to win. Like I said, I wouldn't count Colgate out, even though they're at 11 points. But, I mean, Tony, between you and I really think Clarkson's going to end up coming on top. I was able to watch a game a couple weeks ago, Clarkson. I love their transition game. I love how they play defensively in their own zone and helping the goaltender out. They're getting a lot of offensive production from a lot of different guys. There's not one guy that really stands out to me that really takes control of the offense, which for me, I've always liked in different teams. I'm not the biggest on, you know, schools relying on one guy, one offensive, you know, phenom to really kind of like get the offensive going. So I like Clarkson to win this, but, you know, like I said, Quinnipiac and St. Lawrence haven't been playing bad this year and can easily take Clarkson down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it shows. You look at the last couple weeks, I mean, that those teams are just beating each other up.
Yeah, which like you kind of figure was going to happen when you are only a 4-team conference. Never thought in my life I would ever see that happen, but here we are in a COVID era. So, you know, we'll see how the ECA plays out. This will be intriguing. And, you know, Tony, you know, another conference that really is only dictated by two schools right now is the Atlantic Hockey, which AIC, your team AIC up there up top. And then Robert Morris, kind of a shocker for me, at least, is right behind him at number two in the conference.
Yeah, Bobby Moe playing some good hockey this season. They've struggled a little bit recently. They did fall twice to Erie to Mercyhurst. So, I mean, that's two games that you definitely don't want to be losing. But, I mean, right now, AIC is just so strong. I mean, since losing to Army on, I think, January 10th, they've gone 5-0 since then. They've outscored teams by, like, 20 goals. They've had three shutouts. It's just right now they're a wagon.
Yeah, I would agree. And what's crazy is that, you know, this conference to me has always been one of those conferences where, like, especially this year, you know, we're not going to get a lot of sense of where do they stand in the country because of the whole non-conference. You know, there's no team is really playing a non-conference schedule. We've seen a few non-conference games played here and there, but not a true official non-conference schedule that we would have seen in years past. So to get a better understanding of like where AIC and Robert Morris and even Army and Mercyhurst stand right now, it's definitely, at least for me, you know, if we, you know, we're obviously going to see one of these in the top 16 for the Frozen Four. Where do they stack up with some of the, you know, the prolific teams that we're seeing right now in college hockey? It's hard for me to say, but, you know, you did mention AIC has been playing extremely well and getting a lot of great goaltending. So it kind of, you know, gives you hope that AIC is going to could possibly make a little bit of a deep run here if they come out of the Atlantic on top.
Yeah, I mean, they're a team that can make some noise come March.
I mean, one that shocks me is Sacred Heart. Then again, they've only played six games so far this season. This is a team that right now, with 4 weeks to go before we start looking at conference playoffs, is not even going to – even if they start winning, but right now they're not really playing that well, which is a shame after the last couple seasons where they've played extremely well. They wouldn't even qualify. I mean, we got a few teams here, Canisius, Bentley, RIT. You know, they're all under 10 games right now. Like I said, Tony, this is really a two-team conference, at least at this point, between AIC and Robert Morris, both at 13 to 12 games played with 4 weeks to go. They're obviously going to hit possibly with this potential minimum game requirement. So really we're talking a 3-point swing here. So this will be intriguing to see. And I'm looking at the schedule right now to see if these teams play each other in the upcoming couple of weeks.
I don't believe they do.
So, I mean, this is going to come down to just like a lot of praying, they're really going to have to take advantage and really dictate their own future here by winning a lot of games coming up here.
Yep. Yeah. And the thing to note is AIC has played one less game in conference and has a 3-point lead.
Yeah. So. And I know you're a stickler on the games played. I knew you would bring that up, which, I mean, that's a big advantage for AIC, which is puts a lot more pressure on Robert Morris to really not lose a game in at least the next couple weeks and really hope that AIC can at least lose one here. I mean, AIC's got a tough one coming up here tomorrow night as they got to play Army, and Army sits at third in the conference right now. So, you know, keep your eye out on that game. That could be an interesting one here. But, you know, Robert Morris has to play one of our independent teams, good old Long Island tomorrow. Tomorrow. Yeah, it's tomorrow the 4th. Tomorrow is the 4th. So it is Thursday night hockey.
Yes.
So watch out. Maybe Long Island here, who is having a decent season for a first time in Division One as an independent in a COVID era. Maybe Long Island can upset Robert Morris here.
Yeah, you never know.
But, you know, I mean, Tony, we'll see how the AIC and Robert Morris, that battle plays out here over the next few weeks in Atlantic hockey. But, you know, I just mentioned Long Island, Tony, so let's talk about the two independent teams we got here. Like I said, Long Island's hasn't been playing terrible. Overall, out of 8 games so far, they're 3-5. But I've seen a lot of good things come from the program in the small sample size that we've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're not knocking out of the park or anything, but I mean, that's to be expected in the team's first season. Right now, what are they? I think 3-5 overall, so nothing to scoff at for a new program.
No, I think this is, I think, a different situation than the last few years when we saw Penn State come out and then Arizona State. Those were two programs that were dominating the club level. Long Island has the same type of success in history that those other two programs had. So I think people might have, hopefully, their expectations were extremely high for their first year. But this isn't a first year that I would be disappointed if I'm a Long Island fan. I've seen some highlights. There's a lot of good things that are coming their way. The more recruiting they do over the next couple seasons, I think will help them, which is we've seen help Penn State and Arizona State. So, like I said, you know, Long Island's just getting started, in my opinion.
And I think eventually they're going to fit right in the Atlantic.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that will be a great fit for them. And then possibly, you know, if they can get some real talent from the recruitment level, you know, really shake things up in the Atlantic by making some deep runs over the next couple seasons.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the other independent, though, is, you know, I really feel for Arizona State because I believe every single game has been on the road.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it has.
And you have to do it in a good Big Ten conference.
Yeah. I mean, this is the crazy thing, too, Tony, is that they've actually played, I think, more games than I think anybody possibly in any team in college hockey. I think maybe they're tied with Bowling Green for most games played so far. They got 20 games played under their belt. I think they've have played a few. If we're going to classify them for Big Ten, then I would say they've played a couple non-conference games. But everything I think you're right, has been on the road. Not been the greatest season so far for them, though.
No, not at all. I had some notes, but I'm gonna wing it here with it. They've just struggled. I mean, they've gone they're 1-7 since the beginning of the new year. I mean, granted, currently they're on a 4-game losing streak, but that was against, I think, what, Minnesota and Wisconsin, two of the best teams in the country.
Yeah.
But in these 4 games, they've been outscored 29-4.
Yeah. This is definitely not the same production we saw the last couple seasons. The prolific offense just hasn't been there consistently like we've seen the last two seasons. But defensively and goaltending is almost non-existent. I mean, right now they've given up so far almost 90 goals this year in 20 games played. Not a great stat you want to see from a team that you were hoping to make a deep run this year. Granted, they've, I think, probably have the biggest hump to get over as far as in a COVID era. They're in a conference that they really shouldn't be a part of. And like Tony, you mentioned, they're playing most, if not all, their games on the road because no one's out west with them, except the closest maybe being the Colorado States and North Dakota. So, I mean, I feel for Arizona State with all the traveling they've probably done this year, which is crazy to think in a COVID era where we are trying to minimize travel, which is why we're in a conference-only schedule. But Arizona State is chugging along here. I don't know what they're going to do in the Big Ten tournament if they are allowed to play in?
I don't think they're able to, because I think every game has been classified as non-conference. But, you know, I think just like them, I think that's why Huntsville's having trouble getting games in. I mean, they've only played 8 games as well, but I think that travel is probably a huge element.
Yeah. Which, you knew, I think Huntsville was going to struggle regardless. You know, were they going to have a season? Were they not going to have a season? For most of 2020, we were under the impression the Huntsville program was done until they got that donation and were able to get the funds and enough funds together to bring the team, the program back. But at that point, they had already lost quite a few people due to transferring out of that program in university. So you knew Huntsville was going to struggle in the WCHA, regardless of how talented this team may be or how many games they were going to play or not play. In a WCHA conference that, you know, again, is kind of top heavy, as we've talked in years, you know, last couple of years, but maybe not as top heavy as we really think. I don't know, Tony. Minnesota State, I watched them play against Bemidji State. Absolutely obliterated them in shots, and Bemidji State won. I think the shot total, if I'm not mistaken, in one game was like 37-10. Bemidji State won.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota State's still the top dog in that conference, but man, Bowling Green has been playing really good hockey, and Michigan Tech's been another impressive team. And I think you look at the way – and Bemidji hasn't played many games. I think they've got 12 down, which same as Minnesota State, but they've been playing really good hockey as of late.
Yeah. Right now, Minnesota State, at least conference-wise, is playing really well, and even overall. I mean, they're 9-2-1 right now. And they might have one of the best goaltenders right now in college hockey, Dryden McKay, who I think has only got one loss on his tally. But, I mean, if you look at the goals against for Minnesota State, they've given up 15 goals in 12 games, scoring 41.
Well, and that's the crazy thing. I found this stat. Since January 1, they've given up 7 goals, and 4 of them came in one game.
Wow. So, I mean, they're getting outstanding goaltending then. And, in Minnesota State, I watched I actually ended up watching one of their games against Bemidji State. A lot of speed, there's a lot going on in that game, but they really do attack the puck, especially on the boards, which I love seeing. It really kind of suffocates the opposing team's offense to really even try to get something going. And Bemidji State, who I noticed really isn't a team that can get an offensive setup. I mean, I watched one of their another game of theirs a couple weeks back. I saw more chances off the rush than really trying to establish an offense in the O zone. Against the Minnesota State team with that defense and that goaltending, that ain't going to fly. That one win off of only 10 shots is a blessing in disguise for them. You know, Tony, this isn't also the same Bemidji State team that we've seen in the last couple seasons where they were really kind of on Minnesota State's tail, at least in the standings wise. Suffering a couple losses here. I mean, only 12 games, are 6-4-2, technically in 6th in the conference right now. I really think this is a 3-team conference, at least as we're looking at right now. Tech can try to make a late run here, I think, and maybe try to put some pressure on Bowling Green and Minnesota State. But like, Bowling Green's been playing great hockey. This offense has actually surprised me.
And they have a big series this weekend.
They do. And I like Bowling Green. I've always said Bowling Green's always been a very defensive-minded team, and I still think they are. But like I said, the fact that they got 80 goals scored this year so far overall, and granted, yes, they've played 20 games. They've played
– That's still 4 goals a game.
Yeah, that's not the offense that I've known Bowling Green to be in years past. So this offense has really established something this season and established it very well while still maintaining the defensive game that I've really ever, you know, seen and known them to play. And you know, Bowling Green has always been a tough team. They like to get on you and beat you up physically. You know, they're going to put the pound on you, especially along the boards. They're still doing that. But then once they get that transition game going from the defensive zone through the neutral into the O zone. This offense is really getting established, and they're lighting the lamp now. So, I mean, Minnesota State, this isn't their conference to lose. This can really come down to Minnesota State and Bowling Green, and I like what Bowling Green's putting on the ice right now.
And the thing to add is what I'm looking at both of their schedules right now. Bowling Green, after this, I think they've got Lake State, Northern Michigan, and they got Huntsville. I mean, that's six games that are better there for them to win. Whereas you look at Minnesota State, they've got to go to Bemidji State, and they still have Michigan Tech.
Yeah. Well, and like Tony, you mentioned too, I mean, you know, Tech's playing very well, and you know, they played a pretty big series couple of weeks ago, your favorite against Northern Michigan. Tech came out on top 4-1 in that. I thought that was a big win for Tech to make a push here in the conference wise, so that Bowling Green and Minnesota State don't pull away. Tech is going to need some help here along the way. I mean, Tech is going to, towards the end of the season, you know, wraps up their season. Ferris State.
Ferris State's not – two of the games are non-conference.
Oh, okay, that's a good point.
And Huntsville is too. So it's four games that should be easy points aren't going to be worth any points.
Which this whole COVID thing really just fucks everything up.
I'm really not sure what's happening in the WCHA, but I'm going to add this. You mentioned it's really a three-team race. And I agree with you, because if you look at Michigan Tech's schedule, they lost a game pretty early to Lake Superior. But other than that, their losses have been to Bowling Green, Bemidji, and Minnesota State. Yeah. Well, and to add in there, they've beat Bemidji State and Minnesota this season, State.
So, and Tech, I haven't gotten to watch any of their games. I caught a few highlights. You know, Tech has got something good going there. I mean, Tony, they had something good going last year. It was a struggle to get over that hump at the third and fourth spot with Northern Michigan. Because here was Minnesota State, Bowling Green, and Bemidji State really kind of dictating last year's top three spots. So it's not like this is a surprise that where Michigan Tech is playing well. Michigan Tech has been playing well the last few seasons. And here they are, third in the conference, and really aren't that far off from Bowling Green, Minnesota State. But I agree with you, Tony. I don't know what the fuck they're doing in the WCHA when it comes to what's conference and what's not. I log onto the CHN app when I'm out to check on scores and standings, and sometimes it just doesn't make sense to me because, like, they don't rank them. I like to look at the points, and you would think it's going to be in descending order, but then I look at the standings, I'm like, well, why is 21 points six, but 7 points is second? This doesn't make sense to me. Clearly the app does not configure how the website might be doing it. I don't know.
So the website has it pretty laid out pretty easy. And I saw this somewhere else I think the NHL is doing the same exact thing. It's not based off points. It's based on like point percentage.
Oh, okay. I got you. I must have not saw that.
So if you look at, I'm going to, like, a good example, if you look on the website, Hockey East. So BU is in second place in Hockey East with 13 points.
Oh, I see the point percentage is descending. I see what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, like Hockey East, if you're just to look at the points, it's like, oh, UMass is killing it. But they played six more games in BC, and they only have eight more points. And so
– Well, they should have freaking I'm not trying to, like, shit on CHN here, but I'm looking at their app right now. They really should have maybe updated this for at least this season to, like, accommodate maybe and get rid of points and just put point percentage there so this wasn't as confusing when you look, you know, when you're out and about, if you can be out and about, and you're looking at scores and because the standings on the app does not indicate point percentage. But now that you mentioned that, and I'm seeing it on the website right now in front of me, that makes a whole lot of sense. So good call out there.
Yeah, I know. I was, like, curious. I was like, why the hell is BU in second?
Yeah,
there it is.
And they only got six games played, and they're on freaking shutdown. and they're going to stay in, and they might stay in second place for another week or two. This whole COVID, can we just go back to just normal college hockey? I swear.
Well, then you get Hockey East too. What, they're at a schedule now where they're like, well, we're just going to play it week by week.
Well, yeah. And like, you can't even fault them for that. Like, I'm actually like happy. No. Like, at least they're trying to do something here versus like, I don't know if you saw, but like in Canada, I saw one, Providence is now shutting down minor league hockey. Like, are you kidding me? Like, let these guys play. What more, like, are we gonna, like, you know, screw up as far, you know, when it comes to, like, you know, it's not like these kids are on contract here and they can come back whenever they want. These kids get 4 years, 5 years max to play collegiate sports, and we're sucking the life out of them in one, and we shortened one last year. Like, at this point, are you guys kidding me? So, like, kudos for Hockey East. It's a mess. It looks like a mess, but they're at least, you know, especially like in the city of Boston and the state of Massachusetts in general, you know, it's a clusterfuck, but at least good for them that they're trying to put something together. Cause I was worried about the city of Boston not even playing this year.
Yeah. I'm glad they got something figured out.
But, you know, Tony, we're talking Hockey East, so why don't we just keep talking about Hockey East, which is, you know, not the same Hockey East that we're known to seeing. You know, we usually see a pretty competitive standings 1 through 10, and then Vermont likes to sit at the bottom by themselves. but kind of different this year. But now, if you really look at it, maybe now with the point percentage thing, because you really opened my eye here. But I really only look at possibly five teams here that really stand out to me. And I'm going to actually maybe knock that down to four, because at this point, I don't even think Boston University, as good of a team they are, is going to have a postseason. So I'm looking at BC, UMass, Northeastern, and my boys over at UConn.
did you see that tweet I sent your way the other day?
Hey, UConn started off slow, you know, and they got me worried. But I think some of them might be listening to the podcast, and they're like, hey, we got to do it for Wally. So they're making a deep run here. I think UConn, watch out. Maybe they win a Hockey East tourney here. I don't know.
Next year for Christmas, I'm going to get you a UConn hockey jersey.
That's what's up.
you know what we're gonna need to do once all this is over and we can travel and stuff. Let's go visit Darren because he works at UConn. Yeah. Let's go visit Darren, play some Strato, drink some beers, and watch some UConn hockey.
I'll say this about, if you get me a UConn hockey jersey, I'll be the only person that's not on the hockey team that probably has that jersey. You might need to customize it.
I'm going to text Darren and be like, hey, can you hook us up with a UConn hockey shirt for Matt?
But hey, UConn's playing well. And they've played a lot of games. They got 15 games under their belt. Record wise right now, it's not, you know, they're just above 500. But the last few weeks, they've been playing really well and trying to really stay competitive here in hockey, especially when you're talking about Boston College and UMass right now, who I believe are both in the top 16, but UConn just cracked top 16 this week or this past weekend. So, you know, watch out Hockey East. The UConn Huskies are a coming, and I'm supporting it.
I'm here for that.
Let me tell you, if I could make bets right now on college hockey, I'd put some money on UConn right now.
What do you think their odds would be right now to win the national championship?
They would easily be like plus 8,000 right now, guaranteed. Hey, PointsBet has name your bet. Maybe I'll just submit that and see if they'll let me put money down. Oh, there's $20 down the drain. Whatever. But Hockey East right now, BU's been playing really well, Tony. BC. We're not shocked by that. I don't like to look at the USCHO rankings anymore because we all know it's all about the pairwise, but if you want to look at it, they've been in the top three with Minnesota, North Dakota, basically fluctuating throughout the year. No surprise here. Boston College has been playing outstanding hockey. You know, they might have one of the best young goaltenders in the game in Spencer Knight, who actually is technically undefeated right now. He's 9-0-1 in 10 games. Kid's only a sophomore. BC's got someone good there. I guarantee he might. He's going to – we'll see him at the next level. And then Boston College, you know, like we've always known, has been a very good offensive team. And right now they're showing it. And that's why they're sitting at the top of Hockey East right now. But, you know, UMass, who I kind of doubted after the Cole, Cale McCarr, Hobie Baker year, I thought maybe after he left, UMass would fall apart again and we would see the same old UMass we kind of know, which is really that this, you know, kind of just hangs towards the bottom three type of thing. That was the team you kind of beat up on for if you wanted, you know, a solid two wins. And they've kind of really proven me wrong. They proved me wrong last year. They were still a top five in Hockey East. And I think most of the year they were actually in first. And here they are sitting third right now, 11-4-1 in the conference. They're 11-5-3 overall. Offensively might be better than Boston College.
Yeah, I mean, they're such a strong team, and I think that could potentially be the Hockey East Championship.
BC and UMass? Yeah. I mean, you're calling that. I'm calling BC and UConn. UConn wins. UConn wins 5-4 overtime, calling it.
So your pick right now is Western Michigan over UConn for the national championship.
I don't think Western's going to make it. Too young. Two. We'll talk about it in the NC when we talk NCHC. I like what Western's got on the ice, but I don't think this is going to be their year. So I'm putting all my apples on UConn. I'll even tweet it out right now. So I go on record. UConn, Beast versus BC, Hockey East champ, 5-4 overtime win, UConn.
Oh God. Also, while we're speaking on Hockey East, I got to see former BU goalie Jake Ottinger get his first NHL win maybe a week or so ago against the Red Wings. You know who scored a goal for the Red Wings?
I know you already texted me, Danny D.
Danny D.
If we're gonna throw out some Western Michigan semi-bias knowledge here, wish he would have done it in the one game I picked him in one of my gambling nights. Threw $5 on him to score a goal against the Hawks. That would have been a nice little payday, but I guess, you know, I'll take it against the Stars, even though I didn't bet on them that night.
I recently purchased a Danny DeKeyser bobblehead that's sitting in my office.
I'm waiting for him to no longer be on the Red Wing till, and then I'll purchase apparel or memorabilia with his name on it. I do have a hockey stick autographed by him and maybe something else I don't remember. So I got something from him, but that's before he was on the Red Wings. So I'm okay with it. but yeah, so Tony, Hockey East, I think UMass Lowell, before we move on, UMass Lowell, I think, has really kind of shot themselves in their foot a little bit, but also a team that hasn't played. They're like BU right now. They haven't played a lot of hockey, and they might even be in jeopardy of being on a week-to-week basis from what I'm reading. That hasn't been completely confirmed yet. So this is going to be unfortunate for a UMass Lowell team that isn't to the same standards we usually see them at. It's not, and that could also be due to just the COVID era, not a lot of ice time, not a lot of games. You know, I guess the trend, Tony, for the, you know, most of these hockey conferences is, you know, these, we're talking, you know, this is a 3-4 maybe 5 team conference at this rate, just based on percentage and all that. And if I look at Hockey East, like I said, I'm looking at really 5 teams right now. And I'm not counting BU as my 5th team. I'm looking at BC, UMass, Northeastern, UConn, and, you know, throw Providence in there. Providence has been playing pretty well. really need to kind of step it up defensively and goaltending wise. So this was going to be tough for Providence to really make a Hockey East run here. But they are in the mix here when I look at the standings and the and how they're playing out so far. So that's where I'm at with Hockey East. But Tony, I think we're down to what we haven't talked Big Ten or NCHC hockey yet. Let's talk NCHC hockey because you brought up Western Michigan.
Man, it's such a young team, but recently they've been impressive.
You know, Tony, I said this, and I might have texted this to you a while back. Really got off to a slow start, which was expected. Andy Murray, I think, is playing between 6 to 8 freshmen in the starting lineup a night. Even how has a freshman goaltender going most nights now who's been playing well and has gotten a lot better as the season's gone on. The defensive core, I've always kind of thought Western was really like the, you know, defenseman you type of, you know, if you're going to look at it in some type of way, who really can pump out really good defensemen. Because Western's always been, at least in my eyes, over the last 10 years, a really good defensive team that really kind of like beats you up. And the offense really has kind of come about the last maybe 3-4 years. But yeah, I mean, this is a really young team, but the longer this season has gone, the chemistry has built, and I'm loving what I'm seeing on the ice now. I don't think they're going to make a huge deep run in the NCHC now with North Dakota, St. Cloud, and Duluth, even though they did upset St. Cloud 2 weeks ago and swept them. I mean, they got to play St. Cloud at St. Cloud this week. So we'll see if they can maybe do it again. That would just make a lot of things really intriguing here and probably boost them at least to fifth place in the conference. But Tony, here we are, NCHC, again, we're talking about it. This is just such a dominant conference and with the talent pool and the universities and the teams that we got in this conference.
Yeah, and I think the surprising thing this year, there's three teams that surprised me. St. Cloud playing as well as they are, Omaha, and then the fact that Denver
isn't.
Yeah,
I would agree. And one thing that I think not just the teams in the NCHC, but in all of college hockey, you need to get worried about Minnesota Duluth. I watched them play against Western a couple weeks ago, and they look like the Minnesota Duluth team from 2 and 3 seasons ago. If people don't remember, that's back-to-back national championships. This team is scary good, getting healthy, and things are starting to click. If I'm every other team right now looking at where do people stand, I would keep your eye on Minnesota Duluth. I would not be surprised if we see them in the national championship this year. North Dakota, though, Tony, I think we're not surprised, right, me and you, that they're number one in the conference. But at least for me, I think I'm kind of surprised, that they're not really – I guess there's really no way really a good way of saying this. I guess I'm kind of shocked that they have 4 losses on their resume right now. But I know they've gone through a lot of injury starting lineups over the last month, maybe month and a half.
And they had a few guys out for World Juniors.
I think they might have had almost 3, maybe if not 4 guys out, if I'm not mistaken, and some of their top guys too. World Juniors is over, and some of these guys are starting to get healthy again. North Dakota, we'll see. Continue to dominate, but I think we're going to really see something different now. A really ramped up North Dakota team. But I'm with you, Tony. I also think this is kind of shocking that St. Cloud's at 2nd in the NCHC. I really didn't even think they were going to make it out of 5th. I thought maybe they would play around at 5th, maybe 4th this year. I'm shocked with St. Cloud, and I'm really shocked with Omaha being in 4th as well. I didn't see that one coming. We haven't seen Omaha play this well really since the beginning of the NCHC.
Yeah, it's nice to see. And you're happy to see a little bit of parity in the league. you'd like for us, we'd like to see it be Western.
Yeah. But, well, and Tony, right. I've watched quite a few NCHC games with NCHC TV. You know, Miami, we're seeing at the bottom, which I know if you're a Miami fan, this is probably killing you that this is what your third, maybe fourth season where Miami is not a contender. And if you're Colorado College, you're probably going, well, what the heck's going on? We were kind of competitive last year, even though we were towards the bottom, but we upsetted Western 2 seasons ago. We kind of tried to make a run last year. What's going on? Why are we still bottom two here? There's a lot of good going on for these two universities on the ice. They just need they just need to finish. Miami played, who did they play last week? They played Duluth. Friday night game ended up losing 2-1. There was a lot good in that game for Miami to lose. Really, Miami, I think, dictated the pace more than half that game when I watched. And really just came down to Duluth in the third period came out firing and Miami came out flat footed. And after Duluth got the go ahead goal, Miami just really couldn't find anything to put together to try to tie it up and to get into overtime. And Colorado College is the same. There's a lot of good on the ice defensively and goaltending. They're struggling, scoring, they're struggling, but I see a lot of potential talent. I mean, they lost some of their top players last year that really helped this team offensively. One guy I remember, I believe it was Wilkie, if that was his name. There's a lot of good young talent that Havlin's got on the ice that, like Western Michigan, has just got to continue to develop. And I think Colorado College in Miami, if Miami even stays in the NCHC the next couple of years, we'll see with the new CCHA developing. I think this is when we can potentially see over the next season, maybe two, an actual competitive 8-team conference. But, you know, that's just my projection. I don't know if that's going to be possible or if it even will come true. We'll see. Yeah, I know this for a fact. North Dakota, Duluth, Denver, and even you can throw St. Cloud in there. They got enough talent for the next 5 years. So do I worry about any of those programs? Not necessarily. But I do think Western, Colorado College, and Miami with the young talent they got. You know, Miami, remember, Bergeron is in his second full season now at the helm. So some of his recruits are now going to start coming in. And Havlin's got a lot of nice young talent on the ice right now. I think these three universities in the next year or two, we're going to see competitive in the NCHC.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Tony, let's, you know, we're talking competitive hockey. And right now, I don't know if I want to say there's nothing more competitive than Big Ten hockey, but right now I think two schools are running away with it. And I know one of them is you got your eye on.
Yeah, and I mean I think the fact that we haven't been talking about them all season because we haven't been recording this podcast is ultimately why they're playing so well. And I would say it's a 3-team race, but Michigan being shut down for however long is really going to harm them. But yeah, I mean Wisconsin playing great hockey, but it's great to see Minnesota.
Yeah,
hockey
I agree. And you know we talked about it earlier in the year. Oh, I guess really towards the end of 2020, but earlier in the season. No shock, Minnesota is getting a lot of great play out of Jack LaFontaine, the goaltender. I thought he could possibly be a potential Hobie finalist the way he played last year. I mean, he's playing well again this year. He's 13-3 overall. I think he's played pretty much majority, if not all, of Minnesota's games. But I think the one thing that shocks me, Tony, is Wisconsin. I've shit all over them to how poor defensively this team has been the last 3 seasons and how they relied only on their offense to try to bail them out. And don't get me wrong, Cole Caulfield is leading the way in the country, dominating right now, 28 points, 14 and 14 goals and assists right now. And then you got Linus Wiesbach, who's assisting right there with him, in the top five for scoring right now in the nation. This is a scary offense if you got to play them. But I think what's really shocks me is just how good defensively they've been playing. You know, the goals for, goals against ratio over the last couple seasons has been abysmal. We've seen more goals against than goals for. This year, it's, they're blowing it out of the water, 52-4, 34 against in the conference right now. Did Tony Granato just save his job? I think he might have for at least another couple seasons, maybe one.
Really, in this, I guess this year, 2021, there are two games Wisconsin's defense just wheels fell off the bus, allowing five goals. But other than that, you're looking at three, four, five goals in the other games. So I know that's the key to Wisconsin hockey. I mean, they're this year in 2021, they're 6-2 in the two games they lost.
Yeah.
They
gave up 10 goals. And Tony, I want to point this out too. I mentioned how Minnesota might have one of the top goaltenders in the nation. Wisconsin might have the top youngest goaltender in the nation. Freshman Cameron Rowe, 8 games played right now. He's 5-1. I think he's a huge chunk right now as to Wisconsin's success defensively, keeping the puck out of the net. It's tough as a freshman goaltender, to be the starter here, especially in a big program and historic program like Wisconsin. Stick taps to Cameron Rowe right now, who's playing outstanding Wisconsin hockey, and right now keeping them alive in the Big Ten and contending with Minnesota, who's only, 5 points out right now. And Wisconsin and Minnesota got a big series or a big game coming up this weekend, Wisconsin at Minnesota this weekend.
Yeah, you look at that and Bowling Green, Minnesota State are the two biggest games this weekend. And yeah, I think that's huge for Wisconsin. The fact that they've got a 20-year-old, 20, or I guess he's 19 right now, but turning 20 this year, old freshman.
That's what I'm talking about, Illinois buddy. Tony, here we are to the same trending topic. This is really, I think, a two pony race here between Minnesota, Wisconsin. This is going to be a fun one to see how this ends. Ultimately, I think it's going to come down to this weekend, because after this, Minnesota is going to be at Notre Dame in the next couple of weeks. Wisconsin plays Notre Dame to wrap up the season. And then Wisconsin's got Michigan, which might possibly not even happen. And Michigan State, who's towards the bottom of the conference, just hasn't been playing well this year, is got to play Minnesota. So, this is a big one. Wisconsin, if you want a chance to overtake Minnesota, they almost got to come out of this weekend with a sweep.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And I mean, honestly, if Minnesota,
yeah, I mean, just between you and I, I just don't see Minnesota. I mean, maybe Notre Dame could bring down Minnesota one game. I don't see Minnesota losing two to Notre Dame in the couple weeks. You know, like I said, Wisconsin, Michigan, with being on hiatus now for at least the next 2 weeks, that Wisconsin series just got scrapped, because that's the 13th and 14th. And then both teams are wrapping up the season, Minnesota, Michigan State, and Notre Dame, Wisconsin. I mean, really, Notre Dame could possibly take Wisconsin down in the last game of the regular season. They're a good enough team to do it, but I think just what we're seeing on the ice right now for Wisconsin, how dominant they've been playing lately, I just don't see it happening. This Big Ten, title, I think, really comes down to this weekend. So this will be fun to see if we can get this on. Hopefully they're going to be on the Big Ten Network so I can get a chance to watch that.
It looks like not Friday night.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad that they have the
not Saturday
top
night.
Two teams not playing each other on the Big Ten Network. Attaboy, Big Ten.
There's probably a Penn State Iowa game that needs to be
I'm
played
sure
on
I
the
could
Big
get
Ten
it on my
Network that
computer
night.
or phone then at some point. Because I would like to see that one at some point, either
I'm
Friday,
sure.
Saturday night. That it's going to be a good. I think that's going to be a great battle on the ice.
I'm
That's
sure you
true.
can find an illegal feed that has it. It's
Okay,
on
I could
Fox
probably
Sports
hack into
North.
something if I knew how to hack. Yeah.
Ask Flonsky. He knows how to get all those illegal
But Tony, I
streams.
guess yeah, exactly.
Flonsky's about to go to jail for that comment. Flonsky doesn't do that.
It's one of our few
Flonsky would
fathers in the
not do well in
government.
jail. The government and
Oh God. Yeah, I
Flonsky.
love America. but Tony, I think this is a good segue to say and kind of lead us into something here. But Wisconsin men's is finally, or I should say, Wisconsin women's is not the only dominant hockey program in Madison right now. And we're seeing Wisconsin women again playing extremely well, dominating college hockey. No surprise. With the likes of Darryl Watts leading the w charge. And I do want to point this out. I thought this was awesome to see. Saw it on Instagram the other day that Darryl Watts is projected to make the Canadian Olympic team. Right now, a couple analysts have her seated at the 4 or 3 center spot right now, which is incredible. And why not? She's been playing dominant hockey the last few seasons and continuing to play dominant hockey. Canada is getting a hell of a third and fourth line center at that rate.
Yeah, she's incredible. I mean, she's been incredible since she was a freshman in college at BC and, won the Hobey
Yeah.
Baker. Or excuse me, won the Patty
And
Kazmir.
I mean, Tony, it's the same as the men's, if not maybe possibly worse. I mean, I'm looking at two conferences where almost more than half the conference is not playing, and that's the ECAC. Again, Ivy League schools opted out of the season. We're looking at a 4-team pony race here between Colgate, Clarkson, Quinnipiac, and St. Lawrence, the same as the men's. But it's almost kind of, I don't want to say reverse, but Colgate's really leading the charge right now in that conference with Clarkson, who in years past we've seen Clarkson play extremely well and contend for a possible national championship, sitting at the 2 spot right now in that conference. But Colgate right now is, conference wise, is really leading the charge here, and kind of dictating the ECAC, at least at this rate. But Tony, I mean, I
Yeah,
watched, I
yeah.
think it was on Flow TV. I got to watch one Wisconsin women's game a couple weeks ago, and I might have texted you this. I couldn't believe it. I think it was, and I can look this up later to confirm, and post it on our Twitter page here. But I'm almost positive Wisconsin women, before the third period had started, had already had almost 50 shots on net, and I forgot who they were playing. Hadn't even ha was it St. Cloud? Hadn't even
They're
had
playing St.
10
Cloud.
shots on net yet going into the third
Yeah.
period. The score was like 8-1 at that point.
You know, you're
8-0.
8-0. See, the thing is, you're shocked by that, but when I had season tickets there,
Yeah, I mean, I
they were
guess
doing
because I
that
just
like
don't have
every
the
other night.
access to watch all, all the women hockey games to my disposal. Yeah, it's just crazy to see how dominant. I mean, it's almost like, it's almost like it reminds me of when you were like, in fifth grade and you end up playing, like a basketball game against eighth graders or freshman kid, freshman in high school. Like, you never touch the ball when you're a fifth grader.
So, like it's wild. They beat Minnesota at LeBron Arena. So they're supposed to play again this weekend at Ritter Arena in Minneapolis. But when they played Minnesota last time, they beat them by a combined score of 11-3.
Yeah.
Like that's the number two team in the country that they
Yeah. I
beat
mean,
five
we talk
nothing and
about
six to
in the
three.
men's conferences, like this is a team's conference to lose. I'm almost at the point of saying for on the women's side, this is a national championship, at least for this year, for Wisconsin to lose. That's how good they are.
Yeah, and I mean, they're absolutely rolling. But, I mean, Ohio State's a team that's had their number this season. Ohio State beat them in Wisconsin's opening night 2-3, and they beat them 2-1 in overtime another game. So Ohio State's a team that's shown they're capable of beating Wisconsin. Minnesota State's a team that can score a lot of goals. Their team that gave Wisconsin a nice run earlier in the season. Now, granted, at that point when Wisconsin played Minnesota State, they hadn't played in over a month. They were hit with that COVID bug early on, had some games, canceled, postponed, whatever. But the big one against Minnesota coming up, and we'll see there.
Well, and I know Tony, too, in years past, and this year they're not playing too bad either, and that's Minnesota, Duluth, and right now they got probably the top three goaltender right now in the nation. That's Emma Soderberg. If I'm Minnesota, Duluth, you're kind of leaning on your goaltending here when you got to play Wisconsin at some point coming up. If you want a chance to take down really, Goliath and make a run here for a possible natty here. I see Duluth is sitting third right now in the WCHA behind Minnesota, Wisconsin. Ohio State, you mentioned, I saw them. I was kind of shocked in that opening night that they took down Wisconsin, and maybe that fueled Wisconsin to just go on an absolute flipping tear after that.
Ohio State's a really good team that has always played Wisconsin tough, though, at least over the last, 4 or so years.
It's, I know Hockey East has always had some pretty good teams in years past, but I mean, Tony, I'll lean on your expertise here more. I mean, is this really, could we possibly see, for a national championship, it really coming out of the WCHA more heavily? Let me put it this way. If I'm a gambling man, like you know I am, and then there was women college hockey gambling, would I want to put money on a national championship to come out of a WCHA team more than any other conference at this rate for this year?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think teams like Northeastern and Boston College are going to be, I wouldn't turn my nose at teams like Colgate, Clarkson, Boston College, Northeastern. But at the end of the day, when you look at Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Ohio State, I think you're looking at, three really strong teams. And you might look at Ohio State and see, oh, they're 9-5. But then when you look at, their schedule overall, their losses have come to Minnesota and Wisconsin pretty much with one in there against Duluth. So, they're a good team with losses against really good teams. I'm a little bit biased towards the WCHA, and I just because I know it a little bit better. I follow it closer, but yeah, I think the WCHA is
in all. Yeah, I mean, it just seems like in years past, and like, don't get me wrong, we've seen Hockey East teams really play well, like you mentioned. It just seems like, though, when you were talking about a national championship or the Patty Kaz Award, we're talking about a player or a team out of the WCHA. And I mean, I always look at, when I'm looking at the WCHA, I look at the top four teams. Who are the top four teams right now? Wisconsin, Minnesota, Duluth, and Ohio State. So I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on that. Because, like I said, we do have some decent teams in Hockey East. ECAC, Clarkson's always kind of up there when it comes to like the standings and going into the playoffs. So, but yeah, I mean, I at this point, I'd be shocked if Wisconsin women's team did not win the national championship this year, if we get to that far.
And you look at statistics, it's unreal. Daryl Watts right now, who, I mean, in all likelihood, my guess is she probably gets her second. She basically sandwiches her career with a couple of Patty Kaz awards.
I'm going to probably look this up and do a comparison between her and the likes of like Hillary Knight and her Wisconsin heyday. But I mean, I feel like the way she played last year and the way she's dominating this year again, I mean, I'm one almost leaning towards it. Could she possibly be the next Hillary Knight, or even better, at this rate?
And you know, I want to do a little bit of research. Has it ever happened where the Hobey Baker?
That's a good question. I don't even know that, but we're looking at Cole Caulfield and Dale Watts virtually accepting their trophies at this rate in Madison, Wisconsin.
Bring the trophies.
Exactly. That's a good question. We should definitely look that up and see if that's ever happened. Because off the top of my head, I can't think of a time that it has happened. That's a really intriguing question that we should definitely tweet out too once we know the answer to that one. Yeah, see what his take on that is. You know,
tweet at Brad.
It's crazy. Could we possibly see two Wisconsin teams win two national titles in hockey this year? Okay. Well, I mean, that's probably a little bit more plausible than the Patty Kaz and Hobey. You know, that's a loftier goal, but you know, are we looking at a 2021 year where it's going to happen? Because you know,
maybe
I was doubting the men's team early on this year based on the last couple seasons, but I mean, they're proving me wrong right now, and they commit possibly be a Big Ten champion, possibly after this weekend. If not, you know, come the playoff time.
So in 2006,
That's the years of like Adam Birch, I believe, and like Jake Dowell. Jack Skilly, possibly. That was a loaded men's team with some NHL players, if I'm not mistaken. That was a.
Yeah, let's. I want to see if I can find like a box
that was score. Wisconsin, both women and men's, dominated college hockey that year. I do remember that. Yeah, Pavelski. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, Pavelski. Your boy down in Dallas, who's absolutely
dominating right now.
Oh, yeah. Right now, he's third for points in the NHL. And he's played, I think, what, seven games? He's right now on a not quite rapid as of a pace, but he's on a Darryl
Maybe
Watts
he's been watching Wisconsin
right
men's and women's hockey in his off days and getting inspired here. Who knows?
Yeah, he might be.
I do remember that Wisconsin team, too. That was just a stacked team. And, I mean, Wisconsin's been – with women's has just been a flipping dynasty for almost 20 years at this rate.
Yeah, they – you know, I know that at points there was a lot of talk when the Wisconsin men's job came open
they really want to like dominate one spot and then possibly go take on a challenge at another university that's not doing well or go to the next level, whatever. I don't think in 20 years or so, however long he's been coaching there, I don't think I've ever seen an article written about him, a social media post, you know, tweeted about him, you know, anything like that, where a rumor's been about him going anywhere else. I think he has been so content being the Wisconsin guy for the women's team. And, you know, why not? I mean, he's guy just absolutely knows how to recruit. He knows how to coach. When your name is Mark Johnson, by the way, I was part of the Miracle team that beat the Soviets. It's a pretty good intro for recruiting.
Well, and you know, I think a big thing for him too is that his family ties run so deep in Badger hockey. His dad, legendary Wisconsin coach, Badger Bob Johnson, and I think that's another element. You know, why leave your alma mater, the place where you know he's from, Madison? That's his home. I mean, there's really no need to. I mean, he's one of the best to ever do it, and he's comfortable doing it. He got to coach his daughter.
I mean, and sometimes you see these coaches trying to make the leap after, you know, being so successful at one spot. and I'm not trying to, you know, downplay anything that he's done in his career. I mean, he's going to be known as the greatest women hockey coach in the history of this game with his resume. And I think that's pretty easy to state with confidence. Yeah. When you look at that resume and the amount of players he's pumped out, these, you know, the players that he's pumping out of Madison that have gold and silver medals from the Olympics over the last 20 years, you know, who knows if he would have been the same success if he would have gone to the men's side or maybe try to make a run at it in the NHL at some point. You know, you don't know. And if you're comfortable and, you know, it's working for you, why leave sometimes? So, I mean, I don't blame him at all. And, you know, he's just going to keep it running until he can't run no more. And, you know, good for Wisconsin. I mean, they're just a friggin' wagon at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you look at programs like Wisconsin and Minnesota, those two specifically, and it's just – the cool thing about those programs too is that the university and the communities invest in those programs. How many women's arenas are there in the country? I mean, the Badger men right now are playing at LeBron Arena. I mean, Wisconsin and Minnesota have arenas that are built specifically – for women's hockey, and I think
I always wonder too about this. You know, you could, the amount of talent that we're seeing in women's hockey, especially in the last 15 years, it just keeps growing. Well, obviously, you can't play everybody at Minnesota and Wisconsin. You don't have enough roster space to just take them all. I always wonder, you know, will we start seeing more kind of flutter out to different universities to compete against and take down Wisconsin, try to take down Wisconsin at this point?
I think we are. I think it's already happening. And I think right now, maybe I just see it because it's Wisconsin, but at least in the Midwest, the two biggest areas I feel for women's hockey are, I guess, the three states, and they all touch Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois. It seems like if you look up and down Wisconsin's roster, they either come from Canada, and if they're from the States, or from one of those three states. So, I think Ohio State is a team that benefits from that, where they definitely have some girls from Wisconsin. And I mean, for a Chicago kid, it's okay. Maybe I'm not going to get playing time at Wisconsin. I'm going to go to Ohio State, and Ohio State's really building something, and that's, I think, a prime example of it. But no, you're absolutely right. As this game continues to grow, one thing that I would love to see is a professional game. And, you know, you and I kind of went back and forth on this the other day, and I really don't want to jump into, you know, the finer details, but I think I just saw today that they're the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association.
Well, I saw that, but then I thought I saw too that the NWHL just got put on pause, or is going to be put on pause right before the playoffs, or something like that. I don't know.
You did see that, and I would say to grow the game, the NWHL is not the league to do it. Yeah. I hate to say that, especially like today is Women in Sports Day, And I have a tough time watching the NWHL, and the reason is not because, you know, I don't support it, but I don't watch the AHL. And, you know, I'm going to sound really bad saying that because these are some incredible athletes. But at the end of the day, the best players aren't playing in that league. That's why people don't watch the MLS.
I think you and I have been in agreement for quite a while. The way women's hockey players have been treated over the last – well, I mean, really over the last maybe 20 plus years, but I mean, as of recently, maybe the last 5 to 10 years has, in my opinion, been kind of ridiculous and embarrassing and unfortunate. The amount of talent we're just letting sit on a couch or do something else, you know, why the hell we can't get something established here at the same – not really, I don't want to say the same capacity at the NHL level, but, you know, why we can't establish something more concrete for women's hockey is absurd. you know, and, you know, I'm not trying to get political here, but, you know, we're seeing the same issues in the WNBA when it comes to, you know, pay versus men. You know, I don't know what it's like in women's soccer. But you almost got to believe it's got to be the same thing, the same trend. Why this is so flipping difficult for these organizations to get something established, concrete, and not only financially, but from a competitive level, also fair. It's just absurd and blows my mind that the only time that we really get to see the true hockey talent after college, or even some of the college players, like we said, Darryl Watts is going to make it, or is projected to make it, is the Olympics. Which, why do I have to wait 4 years to go see the top players in the U.S., Canada, and wherever else play on the ice for only, what, 10 games, if that? I think that's ridiculous and absurd. And some of the best talent doesn't even make it.
And that's what I love about the Professional Women's Hockey Player Association, is that these are the Olympians. And then, I mean, you could – I mean, they do it. They play, like, I think sometimes 4 or 6 – like, they'll do pickup games in different locations, and it's kind of like a grow-the-game type of thing. And that's something that's being done at the Garden, and you mix up Team USA and Team Canada players. And, I mean, I think it's such a great way – and it just needs to be televised more, because the people who want to see hitting, they're not going to like the women's game. But if people actually like hockey, they're going to love watching.
No, it's fast paced.
It's they're like, it's very slow paced. It's offensively not. Like, these are
some, if you like seeing a good transition game, watch, you know, watching the women play. Yeah, but I mean, Tony, even like the hitting, it's getting kind of phased out in the men's too. I mean, we've gone from an era from, you know, back way back.
Oh yeah.
To maybe, you know, the mid 2000s, where it was, you know, all about being strong on your feet, and you know, really beat up your opponent. At least you had those few players, or even that grinder line that, you know, you could throw out there to really, you know, bang around on the boards. To now we're seeing it's all about skill and speed and skating. I mean, you know, if you don't like, or if you're not a fan that fighting is kind of getting phased out and hitting is not really a thing anymore, you know, it's not the, you know, you don't see that type of game anymore from, you know, the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. That's unfortunate. And because this is changing and evolving as we go on. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you, and Tony, I think we've talked about this many nights at Waldo's here over the last 10 years, and that, you know, I think hockey from the men's side, you know, I don't think they should get rid of fighting. I think one of the biggest mistakes ever was them announcing it or rumoring it, you know, that, hey, we're going to get rid of fighting, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. Because at this rate, we don't see that many fights. It was getting phased out based on these players and the coaches anyway. So if they didn't say jack shit, no one would flip a no. Like, it's like the only fight I've seen so far, seen two fights in the NHL this year so far. One of them was a great scrap last night. I believe it was the Kings and in the Ducks, I believe, where it was old school, right off the first puck drop. It was planned ahead of time. Two heavyweights went at it. You know, then we get the game started. But you don't see that every night like you did back in the 90s, 80s, and so forth. And, you know, you mentioned women's hockey is really not a contact sport. You don't need to be a contact sport to play hockey. I mean, I go play roller hockey all the time. No one's getting hit, but we're having fun and we're playing roller hockey. Well, what's the fucking difference between that and what the women hockey team is doing, and why you would go play roller hockey and not watch them play? They're going to do a lot better than you are. That's my opinion on it. And they do a lot better. It is. It's just, you know,
and it's still physical.
I like how it's, I don't want to say it's controlled. I don't like the word controlled, but I like how it's set up when it comes to women's hockey.
Yeah, that year I had season tickets at Wisconsin. I remember going to a USHL game one time is the Madison Capitals, and they're actually playing Team USA's under 18 team. And I was actually sitting by Ty Emberson's parents, who's now a defenseman for Wisconsin. But anyways, like watching that game was just so weird to me because I was like, wait, hitting. Oh no, they're allowed to hit. And man,
yeah,
like I watched.
So I mean, and you know, for the people that still don't realize or know, anymore. I mean, in men's college hockey, there's no fighting at all. There's hitting, but there's no fighting. I mean, we've seen some like little scraps here and there, especially like when we were in college, but I mean, it wasn't like toe-to-toe, planned out, hey, you want to go? All right, let's go. Let's drop the gloves. I mean, it's just, you know, certain rivalries got intense back in the day, and one thing led to another, and finally the refs probably just said, fuck this shit. We couldn't control it in the beginning. We're not going to control it now. We'll let these two go at it and kick them out of the game at this point. But in the men's, there's no fighting. I'm like a little okay with that. I think in the beginning I was kind of like, why? But, you know, I like how men's college hockey gets played out. I just wish they would not have to wear fucking buckets on their head. It's just like,
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, like seriously, like they're wearing visors.
Let them wear just a visor. You know,
13, 14, 16 years old before they get to college, and then you tell them to put a fucking bucket on their head. Are you kidding me? And then they go play, and then they go to the pros, and it's all visors. Like, it's why the NCAA has not reviewed that and gotten rid of that. I don't understand that, but whatever. But yeah, I mean, Tony, you mentioned it's women's, what's today? That you mentioned. Why am I blanking on this? Because I've been looking at it on social media all day today. Women. And like women in sports.
The
today.
Professional,
you know,
women's
we're celebrating
Hockey Player Association.
We're celebrating Women in Sports Day, and
oh yeah, Women in Sports
Day. And yeah, we have a lot of great women hockey players, both at the professional level or hope to be professional level and college level right now. And I mean, we've been advocates for women's hockey since we've started the podcast and before the podcast. And we're going to keep saying it, that we hope that this continues to grow for women's hockey. We hope men's hockey continues to grow too. Don't want to say that they're okay to where they're at right now. But we really are advocates for getting the women's hockey, both college and professional levels, growing. So with the talent that keeps getting pumped out and coming through the college levels, it's good to see. And I really hope once these girls or women get out of college, there's something there for them to continue playing hockey.
Yep. And I think a big thing they need investors. End of the day, somebody
yeah,
needs
same
to
here.
Invest.
But
in
I know
the sport.
That
I wish
know,
I had
women's
the money
hockey
that I
game
could.
Is being broadcast on NBC Sports. I don't know. Is it this weekend, Tony? I'm not sure if you saw that. But we do have a women's hockey being broadcasted from a professional level on NBC Sports. So, you know, you mentioned like we just need to see it more on national TV. Hopefully this is a step forward. You would have thought maybe a step forward would have been, was it last year, 2 years ago at the NHL All-Star Game when we got to see 3-on-3 hockey, USA versus Canada, which was awesome to watch. But clearly that wasn't a stepping stone towards really anything concrete. So hopefully this NBC Sports broadcast is going to be a stepping stone forward. And then once we get to the Isobel Cup, I don't know if I said that correctly, which is also going to be broadcasted, I believe, on NBC Sports, which is good for women's hockey. So hopefully the more nationally televised games that we get, we'll get more interest in women's hockey at a professional level, and hopefully investors will come in and we really start putting together a concrete conference and league for women's hockey after they come out of the college level. Yep. Oh, but man, Tony, I know we've been gone for 5 weeks, but we've been talking a lot about college hockey. We got about 4 weeks, 5 weeks left in the regular season. We're going to continue doing this. We're getting back into recording. Hopefully we're not back on another 5 week hiatus. We got a lot of things coming up, big games coming up, see who wins each conference. So I'm excited to see how this is going to start playing out. I said that last year, and then they took the playoffs away from me. So I really hope we don't do that again this year. but Tony, that's all I got really for this Same. For this episode. I mean, you got anything you want to add here?
I do not. Just excited to
hopefully me we can and you get both,
through
brother.
This season and crown a national champion.
That's all we got here. So as always.